This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 2nd of July, 2021, non-farm payrolls day, and we wonder whether today could be the last best chance for avoiding the summer doldrums in terms of volatility. Let's see if this non-farm payrolls report and the jobs report in general sparks some volatility across the board, which have been sorely lacking, especially in treasuries where we're struggling to know whether we're just not getting pricing, price discovery with some of the liquidity effects dominating that Fed reverse repo facility. We'll get to that in a moment. Just looking briefly at the broader market and what has happened here. As you can see on our slide deck on slide two, we had a broader market session that was quite positive. Looking at the S&P 500, if you look at some of the value stocks, they did quite well in the day. And then over in the NASDAQ 100, a sideways to slightly lower day. So the divergence flipping back in favor of the broader market. Global markets in general, quite stable to positive. China, one notable exception overnight, potentially on the back of the day after that big July the 1st celebration, which was a key sort of pivot point on the political calendar for sure. And then on slide three, again, noting the Fed reverse repo facility, it notched huge gains heading into quarter end. We were wondering if there were end of quarter effects. It does certainly seem so now, as that those sort of last 4 days of gains were entirely reversed with a $250 billion drop in one single day. So that is a liquidity reduction of that magnitude. And so that, I think, cues a pretty interesting test for treasuries if there is a significant surprise, and we, of course, don't know, on the jobs report today, whether that injects some volatility in this very tight range we've seen at the long end of the curve. So basically all the activity in the U.S. yield curve has been on that shift in the Fed expectations, the one-off shift in the wake of the FOMC meeting. And then on the inflation front, noticing or notching another interesting data point yesterday with this ISM prices paid. So the headline manufacturing was very much in line, strong growth at that 60 plus level, and the ISM prices paid hitting a new high that has not been seen since 1979, around the time of the second oil crisis. Really remarkable stuff. The transitory, team transitory, as some are calling it, is really got their work cut out for them if inflation levels are meant to fade from here. And then, as noted on the foreign exchange, so we have the dollar strength. And curiously, if we look at that last major peak in the dollar, so if we take the euro dollar chart, for example, on slide four, or pull up a euro dollar chart, that major trough there at 117. Plus a bit was right around the time when U.S. Long treasuries, the yields were normalizing, and they peaked out right around those days when that 117 area was achieved to the downside. This time around, we're working sort of back lower to that key sort of neckline area. And all the focus is, again, just on the expectations around the Fed over the next couple of years, whereas we're extremely quiet at the long end of the curve. So to my mind, having a hard time getting, working up a huge downside interest here if we're not seeing the longer yields coming a bit more unmoored and potentially rising back towards the highs of the cycle. So I'm really curious to see how all this fits in with today's data release and what the treasury market does at the longer of the curve, now that we have some of these potential liquidity and quarter end effects out of the way. Unfortunately, we still have this Treasury general account issue dragging on through the end of this month before they're finished with drawing down the Treasury general account by another couple hundred billion dollars. And then on the trends, just note a couple things. The yen sort of attempts to follow the dollar has really been nixed. That's back to flat. The dollar strength, of course, the most outstanding development in recent weeks. And then the Aussie on the downside, quite interesting, that weakness, relative weakness there ahead of a key RBA meeting next Tuesday, in which they are likely to not extend, in my view, the yield curve control policy beyond that April 2024 bond. We'll get to that preview on Monday. And then over on commodities, actually, let me round out. You've got you're here on the call, Uru, but I just want to round out the that view on the euro dollar. If we are running out of steam to the downside, and certainly our longer term view is for a weaker dollar, as we think that the U.S. is the driver of the inflationary impulse and lower real yields. Do note that Eurodollar volatility is quite cheap because of the relatively low daily ranges, etc. You can see that for perspective on slide 5, the 3-month implied volatility reaching quite low levels. I mean, sub 6% is very low. You see that trough there, that major low in early 2020 is actually a record low in the history of the euro, essentially, before the big ramp around the pandemic outbreak. So that 3-month horizon as well, just for perspective, encapsulates the German election plus a couple of days. So, upside strategies are fairly cheap. One could potentially offset some of that if willing to take the risk with selling a bit of downside volatility, because I think the potential for dollar strength is somewhat constrained because it quickly becomes so destructive. All right. Also destructive, I think, for confidence in transitory inflation, Ola, would be oil prices continuing to rise at the pace they've been since, I guess let's call it the end of May. And yesterday, a massive development for oil markets is we're trying to get the new information from this OPEC Plus meeting. We're not quite sure what we're going to get here, are we?
No, exactly. And as I wrote on as a comment this morning, the circus rode back into town last night. That was the OPEC Plus circus. We had seen the market rally top to bottom, bottom to top 4% during the day, especially led by WTI. I'll come to that, but why WTI is leading this rally. Basically on reports that Russia and Saudi Arabia. That's
a few decades off there, Ole.
Flashback to my childhood there. Russia and Saudi Arabia had agreed on a 400,000 barrel increase on a monthly basis from August to the rest of the year, basically adding 2 million barrels. That was below what the market had expected, and that's why we saw prices take off. Only to the meeting before the OPEC ministers was actually due to meet virtually, UAE objected. Because what they're basically saying is that they have increased their capacity quite substantially during this period of restraint, and that basically means that when the baseline for the production, the base upon which these quotas are calculated, it was set back in 2018. Since then, they have increased their capacity, so they want their base to be increased by 600,000 barrels from 3.2 to 3.8. Basically mean that if they get that through, they will be able to increase production by 600,000 without overstepping its quota. That was obviously something that the others didn't look friendly to. So the meeting paused, and we are now coming back today. But looking at the way the market has reacted overnight and after that announcement, it hasn't really fallen back that much. So there is a belief in the market that we will find a compromise somehow, and that that OPEC Plus will continue to keep these market, I wouldn't say artificially, because that's a little bit too strenuous, but to keep the market tight over the coming months, and that will obviously continue to underpin the price. And probably potentially one of the reasons why we saw gold move higher yesterday, even though, as you mentioned, the dollar continued to show some strength. Maybe that, as you say, the so-called reflation trade may receive some renewed attention here with prices both of oil and gas. We've seen a massive surge in gas prices both in Asia and in Europe, having an impact on investors' expectations for inflation from here. And just to round it up, the reason why the WTI is basically doing the rallying here is the belief that we are not going to see much in terms of added production from the U.S., even though prices are going up. That will continue to see supplies in the U.S. dwindle quite at a rapid pace. And that basically means now that the spread between the front month, August, and December 22 is close to $11. That's obviously very good news for OPEC, because they sell in the spot market, where some of these shale producers in the U.S., they have to sell in the forward market, which are priced quite substantially lower than the spot price. So OPEC is not – OPEC, I'm sure they don't want to shoot themselves in the foot. So they will find an agreement, but clearly a potential volatile day awaits us. And John, I just wanted, because obviously I just want to round up with just the overview of the week on slide 7. But I just want to mention, we haven't got Peter on the call today, but I think probably one of the main news in the equity market yesterday was Robinhood finally filing for their IPO. And it also meant that they opened up the, we were allowed to look under the hood and get some more details out. And I think what's interesting is basically seeing that the percentage of their revenues coming from something like cryptos rose to 17% in the year's first quarter, up from 4% in the fourth quarter last year. And out of those 17%, a quarter of that came from trading in Dogecoin. So it just highlights how the crypto space is really a market of great interest for Robinhood. And generally, they only made $7 million last year, even on 18 million clients. So it's going to be interesting to see. They're filing for an IPO. I believe it's in the region of $40 billion. So so that obviously will set the bar for others, I would say.
Especially with their so-called commission-free trading, which is hidden, the cost of the trader is hidden in the fact that they sell order flow, and that order flow gets potentially front-run by those that are handling it. It's a curious, business, exactly. And it'll be very interesting to see how that flies or doesn't fly.
Exactly. So just to finish off on slide seven, it's really been a week where we've seen quite a bit of a comeback for the commodity space, but. As you can see, it's uneven. It's not as synchronized as it used to be. This week, it's really been the grain market on fire following that lowering of the acreage, following the acreage report from the USDA the other day. We're seeing something like corn up more than 14% on the week, soybeans up as well. And then obviously the energy sector, where both gas and crude oil is trading higher. So, but a pretty neutral week for precious and a slightly lower for industrial metals, which seems just to have lost steam recently, waiting for further initiatives out of China.
All right. And that'll take us to the calendar for the week ahead and for today, essentially, as well. We're looking at the non-farm payrolls change again as a potentially the last sort of chance, if we get a major surprise, to trigger a bit of volatility across markets. So expectations running around plus 720K, that would be the best data points is back in March, which exceeded that a bit. Let's recall that in April and May, we had somewhat disappointing jobs growth relative to, of course, how many out there are still unemployed, with 237 plus in April and a little over 500,000 in May. So watch for that. We're also watching average hourly earnings, a bit difficult, that data series, because again, as the lower paid positions came back in droves in recent months, you saw that average hour earnings drop significantly after a big surge. Again, we're still dealing with these pandemic effects on everything, but we'll be watching for a beat there, potentially expected at plus 3.6% year on year. Unemployment rate, don't really care about that, but watching, but we'll be watching that relative to the participation rate, which is the interesting way to interpret that. In other words, are more people actually searching for work? That's the more interesting thing, usually in the calculation there. And then looking at next week, so we have a three-day holiday in the U.S. It's very important to point out with the Independence Day holiday, and then an Australian RBA cash target meeting on Tuesday. So that's generally Monday night for most of us. And the RBA, I expect them. I think the market largely expecting this as well to sort of maintain their dovish stance. There's also been, of course, new lockdowns with the Delta variant loose in Australia after their former success in suppressing outbreaks and isolating the country, and now dealing with a difficult situation where there, very few are vaccinated in that country relative to where we are in Europe and in the U.S., for example. ISM services, and also noting the prices paid there, it's also ramped to levels not really seen before, except for a couple of months, and that data history going back to the late 90s. The FOMC minutes, I think we're going to see a pretty robust debate on, signaling, on tapering, et cetera. I think it'll be very interesting there because there are a wide range of views. Also have highlighted the JOLTS job opening survey after that crazy April number where we're seeing just incredible number of openings and they're just not getting filled at a rate that is sufficient. So again, the risk there of a bid up for wages as part of the inflationary story. And then one of the big global inflation measures is that Chinese PPI, which is up on Friday and notched a very high level the last time around. So I'll be watching for that. And but I think today it's let's helmets on and see if anything develops off the back of this U.S. jobs report. We'll leave it there. Have a great weekend. Stay careful. And we'll be back next week with Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.